Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Profoundly Pointless. My name is Nick VinZant. Coming up in this episode, card counting and the best birthdays.
The player's edge eventually goes up more and more and more and more, and so you bet bigger when you have a higher advantage.
So how do the casinos feel about this?
Oh, they hate it. They hate it. They loathe it. I mean, it's such a small gesture. It just shows, like, everything they're trying to do, they're just trying to shark you.
I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, subscribe, leave us a rating or a review. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. If you're a new listener, welcome to the show. If you're a longtime listener, thank you so much for all of your support. So I want to get right to our first guest because he does something that while it isn't illegal, it is something that casinos absolutely don't want you doing. This is professional card counter with Josie. So when we talk about card counting, like what is that?
Card counting, specifically in blackjack, is it's a mathematical strategy that uses card removal to determine the consistency of the remaining deck in order to make more profitable decisions. So for instance, there are some cards in blackjack that are more beneficial to the EV or expected value of the player than the house. So those cards tend to be cards like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I'm sorry, did I say those cards were more beneficial to the house or the player?
I think you said the house, the first ones.
Yes, that's correct. I thought I misspoke. But then there are more cards that are beneficial to the player. Those are 10, Jack, Queen, King, Ace, even 9. So the most common form of card counting, you use the people will use the high-low count, which is basically taking the deuce, 3, 4, 5, 6, right? Five different cards, the 10, the jack, the queen, the king, the ace. And you keep what's called a running count of how many more deuces through six compared to tens through aces are remaining in the deck. So as more and more of those deuce through six are discarded, the player's edge eventually goes up more and more and more and more. And so you bet bigger when you have a higher advantage and you make money.
Okay, to me, like, all right, man, you might as well have just been speaking Klingon or some kind of other language, right? Is it hard to do, though? Like, is it really that hard? Is it like one of those things, like, once you kind of like, all right, this isn't that hard.
No, it's not, because all you're doing, in order to keep track, all you're doing, I don't know how much you've heard about card counting, but you hear people say +1, +2, -1. Have you heard all that sort of jargon? Or
kind of, yeah. Like, I've seen a movie about it, right?
And
like,
yeah, 21.
Yeah.
You basically assign values to the 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 as +1. You assign it a +1 value. There are different counting systems, but we're just going to stick to the main one. So every time a deuce, 3, 4, 5, 6 comes into play, you just add 1, right? And then 7, 8, and 9 tend to be more neutral cards, so you just ignore them. And then every time a 10, jack, queen, king, ace is discarded, you subtract 1. So all you're actually doing is adding and subtracting 1 and betting bigger when the plus number is higher. So not really very difficult at all to execute if you can add and subtract by 1.
So if we're talking about like betting bigger in the sense, like, all right, so you want it to be +1 or you're waiting it for it to be like +10 or +5? Like, when are you like, all right, now go?
On average, you're going to have a 0 count. Everything trends towards 0. So as the count approaches like a true +5, you'll see about a 2 to 2.5% advantage for the player. And so you'll determine how much bigger you want to bet at each count according to how much money you have to lose or invest. So, for instance, would you want to bet your entire net worth on a 2.5% advantage play? Probably not, right? So there are some more complexities in developing like a betting strategy that's formulated to how much money you have and how much you can lose, how much you're willing to lose for that matter. So a really easy rule of thumb is the house starts with about an edge of plus 0.5%. So the player has a minus 0.5% edge. And as the count goes up by each one single digit, right, it tends to be a 0.5 advantage back to the player. Does that make sense? So let's say the house edge is 0.5 at zero, then it's going to be roughly neutral at one. It's going to be roughly 0.5 at two, and so on and so forth. So if the count is plus 10, you can approximate that you'll have a, you know, but based on this, it would be like a 4.5% edge. But as you get higher, the edge actually is like exponential, which is nice. So the higher counts are even more valuable. Like a plus 10 is going to be more than double as valuable as a plus 5.
Yeah, a slightly higher number is actually a much higher number. It just doesn't sound like that. But even when you're doing this, right, like even when you have that advantage, it doesn't seem like it's that much of an advantage. So how does this work out where people can make some money doing it? Is it just by like, no, you've got to hit it really hard when you get it, or you just play long enough that eventually having that advantage works out for you?
Right. So it comes down to both of them. When you are wagering more and more money, when you have the advantage, over time you are going to have bigger wins and smaller losses than if you were to vary your wager sort of arbitrarily, you know, not according to any count or anything, superstitions, you know, I lost three in a row, I can't lose the fourth. A lot of gambling fallacies. So think of it this way. At a plus three, you have, you know, a little bit over 1% edge. And if you could average on all of your wagers 1%, let's say 1%. Well, you can go through 100 hands in an hour playing a face up shoe game. So 100 hands an hour, which means that at 1% average return on your average bet, that means you're making your average bet per hour. Yes, you will have to weather some variance, you know, like some wins and losses, but imagine your average bet is even $100. That's $100 per hour. That's a respectable income.
That makes real... Okay. Like, there I really understand it. Like, all right, now there you can make some money. And over the course of, like, if you're gambling for 5 hours, it's $500 or $5,000 or whatever you're... Now I see the appeal of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the thing that's pretty amazing about it is that, let's say you want to gamble for fun, but with an advantage. If your average bet is $15, $20, $25, I mean, people like to gamble recreationally as it is. Imagine if you could just make $20 an hour. I mean, a lot of people are interested in that.
So why isn't everybody doing this, though? Why isn't everybody who's got a decent head for gambling or numbers, like, why isn't everybody doing this?
I have two guesses. I'm not exactly sure why. I think one reason is that people aren't familiar with the math behind card counting. And in my opinion, it becomes easier to rely on the fact that you're doing things properly. You know what you can expect to win or lose in a given hand sample. Hand sample meaning if you play, you know, 5 to 10 hours and lose X amount, you know, a lot of people who want to play recreationally, but they want to pick this up, if they go on a bad luck streak, they say, screw this, I don't even know if this works, you know, and they just freak out and they don't want to do it anymore. But if you have the understanding of like the underlying math, it's easier to be like, well, that will happen, you know, 10% of the time I'm going to face a downswing like that. And this is all accounted for. And I'm pretty meticulous about how I set up how much I bet, you know, how much I'm willing to risk, win or lose, things like that. So I think that's one reason. And then I think the other reason is that most gamblers are, most recreational gamblers are really unfamiliar with gambling theory, I'll call it.
Yeah, for lack of a better word, or whatever it's really, like, whatever, yeah.
Yeah, exactly how the I guess, gambling theory, and I think the house exploits that to a massive degree. They do the same thing that I do, really.
So how many cards are you counting? Like, how many things would you do you have to keep track of at your average blackjack game?
Just to count cards, you would need to keep track of that running count that I told you about, the 2 through 6, as opposed to the 10 through ace, adding and subtracting 1. And then you would want to keep an eye on how many decks are left to be dealt. So if you're playing a 6-deck shoe, the shoe is like the container that holds the cards, and the size of the shoe can vary, like between one decks usually isn't a shoe game, but 1 deck to 8 decks is usually the maximum. And when you're keeping that running count, we call it the tally of +1, -1, blah, 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 in order to find what's called the true count, you're going to want to keep that number and divide it by the number of decks remaining in that shoe. So for 6 decks, we took 2, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So there are, in 1 deck, there are 5, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's 25 cards times 6 is 150. So you have 150 of 2 through 6, 150 of 10 through ace. And so removing 1 deuce in a 6-deck shoe changes the ratio of 149 to 150. It doesn't do much, right? Do you understand what I'm
saying? Yeah, yeah.
With 6 decks, you're going to take that tally number and divide it by the number of decks remaining. So if it's the first hand in the shoe and you have +3, then the true count's around +0.5. And the true count is what tells you what your actual advantage is over the house.
Okay. How long did it take for you to be like, all right, now I can do this?
Well, when I learned to count, I was actually working in a casino. I had a lot of experience with cards, handling cards, the hands, what you should do with the hands. You know, I had a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for? Exposure to blackjack already, as it were, because I was dealing the game. I would say it took me probably like a month of dedicating a lot of time to making sure everything was perfect, zero mistakes. And since then, my game has obviously progressed a lot since then. There are other things that you can add to make your game more and more profitable as time goes on. But in order just to learn to go out and play a profitable blackjack game, I would say it took me like a month of practice.
Would you say, is that fast, slow, normal?
I would say that would be average.
Now, how did you get into it? How did you decide just like, all right, I'm gonna do this?
Well, I always liked like math and logic and philosophy. Like, I just thought all that stuff was kind of cool, and I kind of accidentally found it through that, because while I was working in the casino, I was taking a probability theory course, and basically I just realized that all the stuff that I had seen in movies and whatever, that there was like really legitimate background behind it, and that made me so curious. And so I dove deep into like how this works and found, you know, forums online or whatever it may be, and I just kind of like went ham on it for probably a month, I mean, I'm estimating. And then I was like, man, I'd like to do this. And then I was in college, so I didn't have the bankroll or ability to like risk money to go out and play blackjack. I was never going to do that. And there was a customer that I was pretty close with, and he always saw me like as, to be honest, smarter than I am. Like, he thinks that I'm so smart, but I'm not that smart. But he just wanted to, and he's a gambler, so he just wanted to go ham on it. He's like, let's go, we're gonna go take these guys for everything. And then we just went on like a little card counting run, and everything, you know, went very well. We made money, and that kind of started my bankroll to start my own personal endeavors.
Is it one of those things that you kind of gotta have money to make money? Like, do you need to have a pretty good bankroll to get into it, or like, I got $10, let's go for it?
$10, there is no chance. There is no chance you make it, and by no chance, I mean like 0.0001. I mean there's like no chance. But it kind of depends how much risk you want to put into it. There's something we have a calculation called risk of ruin, you know, risk of going bust. And you can use software and things like that to like calculate what is your risk of ruin playing this strategy. And you just plug it in and the computer will simulate billions of hands and or hundreds of millions. And you can just decide, you know, if you want to take on that much risk or not.
So how do the casinos feel about this?
Oh, they hate it. They hate it. They loathe it.
They know it works, or why do you think that they hate it so much?
In general, card counters are the reason there's so much scrutiny in casino blackjack, because the house is trying to protect their games from being taken advantage of, and the blackjack card counters are in there trying to take as big of a cut as they can from those casinos for as long as they can. And so, yeah, they definitely don't like it.
So what will they do? Like, will they cut you off, or how does this kind of work?
A lot of people are still not aware that the casinos, they'll go in and they'll lose, you know, their retirements. They'll go in, they'll lose their net worth, and the casinos will, you know, be happy to take it. But if someone goes in there and tries to get a, you know, 1% advantage over the house over time, then they're just going to straight up tell you you can't play there. They're going to kick you out. Eventually, if you keep coming back, they're going to trespass you. They're going to try to harass you. And I wanted to get undercover footage of all of those types of encounters. And so that's kind of what started my content, is I wanted to show people this is what happens if you make profitable bets against the house at all. They ban you. They kick you out.
Like, how do they figure out that you're doing this?
So step one is they will monitor the betting patterns of the players in surveillance, because like I told you, blackjack has a lot of scrutiny on the game, because they know that blackjack is susceptible to being exploited by card counters. So they'll have people in surveillance monitoring the betting habits, patterns of the customers. And you know, they might have software, they might have individuals who can keep the count. Plus, they have, you know, they can go back through footage and review footage, and they have a couple, you know, benefits that you don't have while you're counting live. And once they identify that, wow, every time the count is at certain point, this person is betting on average, you know, five times larger than their average wager. Yeah, he's going to make profit off us over time. Ban him. And they don't care if you lose or win. That's the, you know, misconception about card counting. I had gone into Red Rock and lost $10,000. And when I went to pull more out in their high limit room, they banned me. When I went down to my last, as I was down to my last chip, reaching for more cash, they said, sorry, you're too good for us. I just lost $10,000. They said I was too good for them.
They're not even going to take the risk. Now, is this a process that you go through, like every time you come into a casino, like they got to figure it out, they got to do that stuff, or do they kind of know you coming in sometimes?
Now they know me coming in. It got to the point where I would walk onto a property and they would have surveillance. Some of the higher end places and regions, they would have surveillance or security like on their headphone. I would see them look at me, and then they would look down, and then they would kind of like tail me from a distance and then talk to someone else, and they'd walk away, and all of a sudden I have someone else trailing me, and then they're just keeping an eye on where I go and what I do, and it's just not really comfortable. It's not fun. It might sound like exciting, but at some point it feels like it's really frustrating. Pretty much every place I go in, I sit down, and I can't get much time. Mostly only the smaller places I can maybe get an hour, and then they'll ban me.
Are they usually kind of jerks about it, or are they just kind of like, hey man, it's over?
It's hit and miss. In my experience, some of the tribal casinos are I don't know if I would say jerks, but they try to intimidate you as much as they can. They're playing like a psychological warfare type of game against you, and they're trying to like make sure you never come back because you're afraid to come back.
Yeah, it's one of those things that like it's really hard to feel bad for them in that sense. It's like you're mad at me for taking advantage of the game, but you were taking advantage of me.
They're taking advantage of everybody else. They're taking advantage of a good example is in the same room, the casino was offering and comping me drinks. I've had several times where the pits will encourage me to keep taking drinks. They will encourage me to bet bigger and bigger while they think I'm a whale. But then once surveillance catches me, because it's not usually the pits that catch you, once surveillance catches me and I get kicked out, it's just funny. You see both sides. It's not the same person, right? It's the pit boss that's telling you and encouraging you. The people in the pits are encouraging you to drink and bet larger in the high limit rooms. But then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, big guys in a suit that represent the bigger interests of the casino are the ones that are going to tell you, actually, you're not allowed to play here at all.
But it's not technically illegal, right? Like,
not even remotely. As long as you are not using any sort of device or any sort of external help to make your decisions, all I'm doing is betting when I'm allowed to bet. I'm not cheating. I'm not, you know, changing my bet after the result of a hand or doing anything along those lines. So there's nothing illegal at all. There's a bunch of legal precedent that has concluded that no, counting cards is definitely not cheating.
Is there, okay, so blackjack seems to be the dominant one, but are there other games where this can be, like, what other games can you also use this on?
This question is the same reason I still want the face blur, because I found a very specific wager in another casino, in another game. I can share the game. It's Baccarat. There's a specific wager that I found out to be exploitable, like, on my own. And I, you know, part of me wanted to share it so much with the internet. But right now, I would like to just see what I can make and take off them before they figure it out. And I don't really want me blabbing my mouth to be the reason that they maybe take away the wager or they reevaluate the wager as it is. And so there's a specific wager in Baccarat that I found to be, it's actually more profitable than blackjack.
How much have you made doing this? I know you're not going to tell us what the wager is, but can you tell me how much you made doing it?
I'm thinking about if I want to tell you what the wager is. It's a side bet. The Baccarat is not like, I will tell you the return. So blackjack, I told you, makes on average, you can expect 1% is fairly good, is good per hand. So if you're betting $100 on average, you make $100 every 100 hands. This game, there are some situations where you can have a 100% average return. If people are able to figure out what the wager is based on that, I was going to not say what the payout was because that kind of starts to give away what the wager.
Yeah, somebody could backtrack it and figure it out. I know what you mean.
But if they do, then good for them.
Are you ready for some harder/listener submitted questions?
Absolutely.
Is this really better than just a good blackjack strategy? Like if you kind of played blackjack perfectly, or as perfectly as you could without counting cards, is it better than a good strategy?
It's the best strategy. So you're counting the cards and you're using that strategy along with the card counting. So it's kind of like if you memorize that book, that exactly what to do in every situation in blackjack, it actually means you're ready to, if you memorize that perfectly, you're ready to count cards. You're ready to learn to count cards. Because if you don't know that strategy, counting cards doesn't give you anything. It gives you very little. It gives you very little, and you'll still be losing. You need to be able to know what that strategy first is in order to learn to count cards. Because you're counting the cards, and then you're following that strategy along with it. That's the simple answer.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. Right? Like, you got to know how to play first. Then once you know how to play, then you can get into this. Most you have ever won at one time, most you've ever lost at one time.
So most I've ever won at one time would be around 13, 14,000. Then there is my biggest loss is just shy of 10,000, actually. It's happened. I'm trying to decide. Yeah, I think it's only happened once, actually, that I've lost the 10,000, that I've lost 10K in a session. I feel like there was one other time. I mean, I kind of become immune to caring too much about the results of a single session or whatever. So it's not like a big achievement if I win or lose a lot. It's just like part of the swings, and you learn to just become like, what's the word I'm looking for? Just
short
careless.
Memory. You got to have a short memory.
Yeah, you just don't care. You don't care if you win or lose in a day after you do it long enough, because you know you're just going to lose. You're going to win. You know how much you're going to win on average, and it's just like being a robot.
So then, like, okay, if you took it over like a week period or a month period or a year period, whatever like extended period you've done this for.
So after 15K hands with a 1% edge, you'd win like 150 times your average bet. So like if your average bet is 100, 200 bucks, you make 15, 30K pretty easily. And then if you're betting more, you have more money to risk and to wager, you'll make more and so on and so forth.
What kind of gives it away? Like what gives it away in the sense like you can spot if you're at the table with somebody else that you can tell that they're doing it? What usually gives it away?
What usually gives it away is that at the point in the shoe when you want to start betting really big, you see that they already have a huge bet out there. and then like what when that count drops a lot, you see they've just dropped their wager down to a very small size again. You see that a couple times, you know that they're at least trying to follow the count the way they bet, the same way the house catches you. That's how you'll know as a player as well.
So, okay, let's say that you're having a normal hand, so to speak. Your normal bet is what? You see, let's just assume for the sake of kind of just easy numbers, right? Let's just say your normal bet is 100 a hand. When you see the count really go in your favor, what will you jump that up to?
With my personal bankroll, I would feel like I wouldn't want to go more than 10 to 1, which is already an aggressive spread because, I mean, at 3, 4% edge, you can lose a lot of, if you're doing over 10 to 1, let's say 20 to 1, you're betting $2,000. You can still lose, you know, six figures over the course of time betting with that big of a spread. So I'd probably do something around 10 to 1 and feel very happy and safe with it. No bigger than 10 to 1. And I would bet, I would bet between 100 and 1,000. And I would err towards betting 1,000 on a true count of about plus 5 or bigger if I were allowed to do it.
So you'll jump it up pretty significantly, but not super crazy.
The only reason I won't bet more at $100 min is just because I'm not rich enough to be able to take, you know, several hundred K worth of losses on a bad run. It's going to hurt my ability in the future to continue playing and playing profitably. So I'm going to find an amount that I can tolerate the downswings and be able to continue playing in the future. Yeah, it all adds up in the end. It's just about like the math. It's funny, you're kind of like trusting the math more than the results.
So looking at this, right? Like this is, tell me about this. Like what's happening here?
So this is a time when I used another recreational player as cover because the person that I was playing with was a regular. Yeah, meaning they'd frequented these places and played in such a way that, you know, they were definitely not a card counter. So I made friends with this person and they allowed me to go in and play with them and kind of they could fluctuate their bets and follow my instructions. And it basically allowed me when the casino sees me associated with another regular and before they know about me, they're not going to be as skeptical. They're not going to be as skeptical about like what I do. Does that make sense? About
yeah.
how I'm betting? Because yeah, I'm walking in with another player who, you know, is going to lose money, has lost money over time to them. So eventually I just got too greedy, too ambitious, and spread a little bit too much. And, you know, this pit boss got the call, and he walked over and he said something like, have you ever been told you're not allowed to play blackjack somewhere? And I was like, no. I was going to say, no, I'm drinking. You know, I'm like drinking and just, you know, I'm acting like a fun gambler. And then my friend and I had talked about little like pranks or gags to pull on them. He's like, you should do something really childish, like tell them they can't play blackjack, like act like a little child. And I just didn't really know what to say. So I was like, you can't play blackjack. And then he's like, I can't play blackjack because I work here. I was like, well, I work here. And I just acting just right, for entertainment. Like,
just to kind of get a rise out of him. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
So like, how long would that take? Like, how long did it take him to figure it out?
At this location, I think it took maybe no more than 2 hours, probably between 1 and 2 hours at this exact location. Oh, this one's fun. If you go down.
This one? Okay.
My strategy in the high limit games, this is actually a 100 min game. My strategy in the high limit games are I bring in a friend who I can trust, like, with my money, because my intention is to get, like, kind of drunk, and I don't want anyone taking advantage of me or anything like that. And the reason I get drunk is because it buys me a lot of extra time, and the edge that I sacrifice, the advantage that I sacrifice is only marginal. I don't make basic strategy mistakes, but there are like small counting mistakes that usually err on like one or two off. So like I'll think it's +3, but it's +5. But in such an instance, like let's say I think it's +5, but it's actually +3. Either way, I will have an advantage. So basically, as I'm playing, even though I'm drunk, as I'm playing, I'm keeping in mind that like there might be like some chance that this count is slightly lower. And so I'm just always trying to like hedge. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of always trying to hedge my count. And then at some points you just get such a high count that it doesn't even matter if you're off by a couple, because at a true 13 or 14, your edge is so enormously high that the drunk image allowing you to place some massive, ridiculous bet, like for $1,000 or $1,200, like two hands of 600, is worth way more than the fact that it might be a +12 instead of a +15, and that they're going to let you play the next like 10 shoes before they start questioning it. And so I have something on my YouTube where I break down some of the strategies I used. This is a really cool one. So the pit boss tells me to bet big. I ask the pit boss if I should bet big or small when the count is really high. So we have like a, I don't remember, I think it was +8 or +9. And I asked the pit boss, should I bet big or small? You know, I'm acting like a gambler. And
she goes,
big, bet big. But I know she's going to tell me to bet big. And at this point in the session, I already know that they're really like, they're watching my bets a lot, because they had made a call on like the prior shoe about that I had like upped my bet on like a big count. So now at this point, like kind of the heat's on, but I just want to like squeeze as much value as I can. So I ask the pit boss, big or small. She tells me big. I bet massive. I think I won one, pushed one. The results don't matter. I got a ton of value off of the bet. I won some money on that bet. But what's hilarious is she gets a call from the pit boss, and the pit boss tells her he just bet big again, the count right when the count went up. And then she goes, I heard her while I'm BSing with the dealer. I hear her go, I told him to.
Are you banned 100% from any places?
So usually when they ban you, they just tell you you can't play blackjack, because they would love for you to go and sit down at roulette or baccarat or something like that. So usually they just ban you from specifically blackjack.
Has this happened to you so many times that you don't think about it, or is it still kind of a nerve-wracking, anxiety-producing experience?
I think at places where I've already been banned a lot, most people who have done it as much and as long as I have, they just do become immune to it. But for me, I just don't like the feeling of like them telling me, like, I don't know. it just feels uncomfortable being unwelcomed, you know? And she rescinded it after she got told by surveillance, some higher up, to like not have any contact with me, drop him. And I didn't even get the offer that she already gave me. I mean, it's such a small gesture. It just shows like everything they're trying to do, they're just trying to shark you. Like they really are. Every time they give you a free this or free that, it's all calculated based on how much they think they can get off you. The big lights, everything, it's meant to entice you. It's meant to make you make irresponsible decisions and slowly give them the value. So,
Is there anything else that you think that we missed or anything else like that?
They could reach out on any of my social media, Witchozy, the WITCHOZY. It's the name we chose for it. And they can reach out to me on there. But other than that, I mean, I'm going to be streaming some poker on Kick. So I'm going to be studying and learning advanced poker strategies, basically, and playing online and streaming on Kick under the same handle, Witchozy.
I want to thank Witchozy so much for joining us. If you want to connect with him, we have linked to him on our social media sites. We're Profoundly Pointless on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. And we've also included his information in the episode description. If you want to learn more about how card counting is done, the YouTube version of this interview will be live on March 14th at 12:30 p.m. Pacific. Okay, now let's bring in John Shull and get to the pointless part of the show. Do you feel like you're a rule follower?
I mean, I'm not in prison, if that's what you're asking.
Like, if you're just out in society, are you going to follow the rules?
I am a rule follower, but I think as I get older, I'm giving less care of the smaller things. Like, if I'm at a red light to turn left, and there's no traffic coming at all, and there's nobody, no pedestrians, why not turn? Why do I have to wait another 45 seconds?
I'm a rule follower if it's going to affect people around me. But if I don't think that there's any harm in breaking the rules, then I have no problem breaking the rules.
I just sometimes feel like an old crotchety old man, you know? One thing, though, that I never will do, that I want to do constantly, is park in the handicap spaces at places.
Oh, that's one of those like things that I wouldn't even cross at all. I never would be like, oh, I'm just going to park in the handicap spot. I wouldn't do that for a second. But then I had relatives that actually needed those spots, so I probably feel a lot differently about it.
It's really traffic rules. I mean, I don't... What other rules are there to break, really? I mean, the laws of life, gravity? I mean, I don't know.
I mean, like, little rules you could talk about. Like, I live in Washington where you're supposed to pay for bags, and I never pay for bags at self-checkout. I'm like, oh, no bags, and I just take them. Because I live dangerously. Okay, but when you follow the rules, do you do it because you feel like you should or because you're afraid of getting caught?
Just because I feel like I should. I would love to know, like, who, like, if you do break laws on a regular basis, what are they? I mean, do you consider not paying your taxes breaking the law, or are you smart?
I think you're smart if you use the system. I think that's smart, but I think just blatantly not doing it, well, they're going to find out because the government knows how much you owe. They just want to make sure that you're going to be honest with them and tell them, and then they're going to tell you how much you don't actually do. That's a huge scam. Anyway, I polled the audience. 63% said that when they follow the rules because you think they should. Only 37% follow the rules because they're afraid of getting caught. I do think that society kind of has to follow the rules in order for it to exist. I just think that a lot of rules are made for 10% of the people who are complete idiots and kind of ruin things for everybody else. And that people should then know when to let people break the rules.
However, I do feel that as a society, we need to move forward. I feel like a lot of these rules, whether you follow them or not, were made by people in a time and a culture that is not reminiscent of what we face today. Like, I just randomly looked up crazy laws around the United States, and I'm just going to randomly pick a state. Here's one, Georgia. In Georgia, those who engage in llama-related activities are responsible for any injuries they suffer. Like, that makes sense, right? Like, why would it be a thing one way or the other?
Because somebody probably did something, and there was like, well, there's no law against it. Like, well, we didn't really think that people would be doing that with llamas, so I guess now we got to have a law that says you can't do that with llamas.
Or Idaho. Cannibalism is illegal. Yeah, no shit, it's illegal. Why does it have to be written into the Idaho Constitution? Like,
because if it's not, then somebody can get away with it, right? Like, you got to have a law on the books. Cannibalism tends to be frowned on.
Anyways, I'm gonna end this with our two states that we were born and grew up in. We'll start with Kansas. Don't shoot rabbits for motorboats. It's illegal.
Does that means that somebody did that and something happened, right? Like, you don't just like, hey guys, let's just as a precaution, we should probably cover this. Like, no, somebody specifically did that. Like, now we got to write a law about it.
Like, the tagline here is, it's illegal to sell liquor by the glass in over 25 counties in Kansas. Catch fish with your bare hands, and no, you cannot shoot a rabbit from a motorboat.
Highway hunting. Highway hunting is, for people who don't know, I don't know if it's called highway hunting, but it was basically like people would hunt by just driving around. As opposed to actually like hunting the way you're supposed to. They would just drive and shoot out their cars. Happens, Kansas.
Well, and here's one that makes absolutely no sense from my great state of Michigan. You can't be drunk on a train in Michigan, but you can be drunk in an airplane. And don't worry, once you get to Ohio, which borders Michigan to the direct south, most of it, you can absolutely start drinking. I thought it was kind of interesting. Let's give some shout-outs here. We're going to start with Nick Bradford. Shout-out to all the Knicks in the world. Thomas Layton, Anthony Rock, Rick Carmen, J.D. Shu. J.D. can go either way on J.D.'s.
There's a few names where I'm okay with having them be initials, essentially. I can be okay with J.D., A.J., obviously D.J.
What about B.J.?
Not as a person. I mean... I wouldn't name my kid that.
All right.
It's going to be hard being a guy with a name BJ.
Oh,
it's, hey, BJ.
Though there have been some successful BJs in the world, in the history of life.
Who?
BJ Surhoff, former baseball player.
Never heard of him.
All right. Well, here we go. Let's see. Famous. Oh, boy.
Famous BJs. You're going to go down a road on that.
Yeah. All right, yeah. Back to shout-outs. Justin Underwood, Burton Whelan, Luke Kohler, Hank Jackson III, and J.B. Ausenbaugh. Appreciate all of you for checking us out. All right, well, speaking of actors and actresses, we're going to switch up the fun portion of this show.
Oh, just okay, switching it up.
Just a hot right. second. By the time this comes out, the Academy Awards, which were the highest viewed Academy Awards, if anyone cares to know that, in several years, were on this past weekend. So I thought it might be a little fun. I had my wife randomly pick out 10 celebrities.
Okay.
And their ages. And I either went above or below their actual age.
Okay.
And I got 6 out of 10 right. So I want to see how you do. And then the winner gets nothing.
Cool.
All right. Let's see. We're going to start with Danny Glover. And I'm going to say 76.
Well, wait a minute. Don't you already know the answer? So what's the point of you guessing if you know the answer already?
No, I'm going to give you a number, an age, and then you tell me if you think.
Oh, I see. You're giving me a point of reference.
Yes. I'm not giving you the actual number. I'm just giving you like an age of reference, and then you tell me if you think the actual age is above or below that number, and you get it right or wrong.
Okay. Above.
Correct. He is 77.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right.
I also got that one right, so one for one.
Very good. Very good.
John Cena, 48.
He's 43.
You are correct. It is lower, but he's 46.
Oh, he's 46? I thought he was 43. I'm not playing your game. I'm just going to guess the age.
I mean, you want to just guess the age and not...
I'll just straight guess the age.
Okay. All right.
I'm going to step it up.
Cardi B.
29.
31.
Oh, that's pretty close. I feel if I get within 2 years, that's pretty good. Two years a decade.
Okay. Gisele Bündchen.
44. 43. Oh, okay. Because I thought that she was close to Tom Brady. 43. Okay.
Jack Nicholson.
Oh, he's older. He might be 78.
86.
Oh, my God. He's 86? Well, he hasn't been in movies for a while. Now you're like, oh, well, that's probably why. That's old, man. That's like getting up there. That's like congratulations.
I got that one wrong myself.
I don't know if I want to hit the 80s. I don't know if I want to do that.
Martin Scorsese.
81.
Ding, ding, ding.
Oh.
That's a good guess. Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, I bet he's like 49.
Ding, 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 ding. Two in a row.
Is he 49? Because I thought like, oh, you probably would have heard something if he turned 50 by now.
He is 49 That's why I'm years guessing. Old.
Whew. Man. Okay.
Man, three. You're, let's go for a three-peat here. Danny DeVito.
80.
Oof. Brutal. 79.
Oh.
Brutal.
Close.
A couple more here. Jennifer Lopez.
Oh, she's probably 52.
Man, you are one off. 53.
And what's weird is I'm a terrible judge of age. I can't look at somebody and tell how old they are at all. Okay, do you think that people younger than us look older for their ages than we did?
No. Oof. I mean, I was going to say no, but I'm sure I look like a... I mean, I still feel like I look pretty young for my age. I'm going to say no. I feel like the generation below us looks a lot younger.
Oh, I thought that was going to be a much louder sneeze than that. I gave you a minute for it. I think that they look older than we did for our ages. I think 20-year-olds now look like they're 30. Like, stress has gotten to them.
I will say, maybe for men, I feel, just because the younger folks, I feel, have more beards and facial hair, which I think makes you look a little older. I feel our generation, you know, facial hair was obviously there, but I don't think it is what it is today in terms of so many young people rocking it out.
I was watching the NFL Combine because I actually like the NFL Combine more than I like the NFL. I know that doesn't make any sense, but it does. Seeing some of those people, like, they look like grown men. Like, they look more like men than I do, even though I'm almost twice their age in some cases. Well, not twice their age, but at least 10 to 15 years older. Like, that's a grown... That guy looks like he's 45.
I mean, it's not that much harder to look older than you.
Well, yeah, I guess that's true. Okay, anyway.
All right, last one here. Al Pacino. 81.
83. Man. I'm ready. Are you ready?
Born
ready. Okay, so our top five is top five birthdays. What ages do you think are the best birthdays? What's your number five?
So my number five, and I think this is going to be not very popular, but I'm going to say 50 as my number five.
But you haven't turned 50 yet. How do you know it's going to be a good birthday?
Oh, am I supposed to, like, just do the ones that I've had, like, myself?
Well, I mean, generally, like, you need to have some kind of personal experience with it. I mean, like, why do you think 50 is going to be a good birthday?
I've been to 50th birthday parties.
And you just thought this seems awesome to be 50?
Because I feel like 50 is that age where you're kind of leaving behind the first half of your life. You know, like your kids, you know, if you have a traditional life, and I know most of us don't, but let's just say we do, your kids are getting grown. They're probably in college, maybe out of college. You're hitting that almost, you know, 10, 15 years to go before you're about to hit retirement. Like you probably have a comfy chair that you like. You have a cup of coffee every morning. Like, you know, you're not going out drinking till 4 a.m. then back up at 8 a.m. anymore. You know, just I feel like 50 is a good benchmark of a birthday to try to hit.
I can kind of see that, right? You're kind of on the home stretch. You've established yourself. You're a little bit on the home stretch, but you are also a very old man.
I am. You should see my book collection.
How many submarines do you have? How many books about submarines do you have now? Any more new submarine books?
Have read zero submarine books in 2024.
Oh, audio tape? Because your eyes are going?
No. Surprisingly enough, man, that's a whole other conversation.
Oh, boy. Your eyes going?
I mean, they're not getting any better. That's for sure.
Well, let's just not talk about it. My number five is 25. 25, I think, is a big birthday because it's the car insurance birthday. And you really notice that stuff starts to get cheaper. Like 25, I was like, yeah, car insurance going down. 25 is a big year.
Yeah, I it's not on my list, but, you know.
You're kind of established as a young adult.
My number four, I'm going to go with 13. Not 16, not 10, but 13.
Okay. Why 13?
Because
hitting puberty, first time little Johnny was able to noticing some girls around town.
Don't you worry about little Johnny. No, I feel like 13, you're still a kid. You haven't been exposed to a lot of like the adult. Like I feel like when you're 16, it's, you know, maybe a little drinking, maybe some girls or boys, whatever, you know, whatever. But when you're 13, you're still like, yeah, I want, you know, trading cards and G.I. Joes and Barbies and play sets. And, you know, you're still kind of a kid at heart at 13. And for me,
I could see that. Yeah.
For me, okay. 13 was a special birthday because it's like one of the first birthdays I remember where I got like, you know, gifts and stuff. So
I don't really remember any of my birthdays as like a kid, but I can see that. I would put that age closer to 10 to 12. I think 13, you're probably an eighth grader. You're like, I'm getting ready to go to high school. I'm going to be in high school.
I'm going to go beat some ass and get chicks. Anyways, all right.
My number four is 18. It's more like a trap birthday. Like, oh, now you're a responsible adult and you can be legally prosecuted as an adult, but you don't really get a lot of benefits.
Yeah, you're right. I think you said it perfectly. 18 is a trap birthday. Like, do you even remember 18?
Not really.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah, it is. Like, 18 is a trap birthday because you get all the responsibility, but none of the rewards.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you can buy cigarettes. Like,
I've been buying my dad Newports since I was 11.
That's kind of crazy that the trade-off for being 18 is like, you can buy cigarettes. Oh, and also we can draft you to go fight in a war, but you can buy cigarettes. Like, that's a trap birthday.
Once again, it's rules that don't make a whole lot of sense.
What's your number three?
So, once again, I did, like, future me, and I put 75 as my number three.
I don't think you're going to make it to 75, man.
Oh,
how do you know that you're, like, that's not a given. 75 is, like, I don't.
Once again, I'm just going off.
What, death is approaching? Like, congratulations. You don't have to do this much longer?
I put 75 on the list because in my mind, I feel if I am able to get to 75, how wonderful would it be to look back on your life on that day and just think of all the things you've done, accomplished, your family, maybe your loved ones still with you. Like, I feel like 75, you're still mental. You have the possibility of still being mentally there, but like obviously you're diminishing a little bit. So like I feel like it's a last big birthday, number wise, once you get up that high to where you can kind of cognitively be aware.
Okay. I can kind of see that. I think it would be a big birthday, but that's really going to depend on your life. Like if you're in pretty good health, 75 could be a great birthday, but if things are going downhill, it's not going to be a good year for you. Like, oh, it's only going to get worse.
I mean, you ever seen Brendan Fraser in The Whale? Because that's where I'm heading. Oh, all right.
Oh, no, you working out now. Oh, God. You just want to segue and you working out. My number three is 21.
Okay.
It's kind of cool. It wasn't that big of a deal because, I mean, for us, like at that age, you were already doing all that stuff anyway. It's not like, oh, I'm 21. Now it's first time. So, but it's kind of cool. I think 21 is a big birthday.
I agree with you. 21 is most definitely a big birthday. I mean, I have 75. I'm going to go to the other extreme now, and I'm going to put the age of 8 as my number 2.
Oh, okay. Like a little kid birthday?
I mean,
it's probably pretty sweet, like birthday parties and stuff.
Yeah, birthday parties. All your friends are there. You know, once again, you're 8 years old, right? So you don't have to worry about the cops. You don't have to worry about breaking laws, rules. You can chuck a ball pit ball at some dad and piss him off and he can't do anything to you. You know, just 8's like, I feel like 8 is the perfect sweet spot to be a little kid, like a little kid and have fun at a birthday party.
My number 2 is 30.
Okay.
I think 30 is the year when suddenly all of us, all things just, 30 is the year when everything becomes okay. Like you just suddenly like, you have all these problems at 29 and then you turn 30 and you're just like, all right, it's life. Not a big deal.
See,
everything becomes okay.
I think actually 30 got worse for me. I feel like I didn't have any real worries until I hit 30, and then everything has piled on now.
But I think you finally realize that you can only do what you can do. I feel like that's what happens at 30. You realize, like, I can only do what I can do. I can't control all this other stuff.
It's a little bit of maturity coming in there.
Yeah, I bet we both have the same number one. It's your number one.
We do not, actually. My number one is 21.
Oh, you don't have 16 on there at all? That's like that's 16 or driving age wherever you live, I think, is the biggest birthday. Because that is your first taste of real independence as a person.
Yeah, no, I don't have 16, I have 18. 21's on there just because 21 is kind of like that final hurrah of your childhood. If you're able to, you know, live, I guess, the American dream, so to speak, and go to college, whatever. Like 21 is kind of like, well, going to be graduating soon out into the real world. Like, and plus my 21st birthday party was fantastic. So
did you have a drink?
2 fists, actually.
Oh,
it was a,
That's
a
rough day the next day. I didn't do that at all. It's like, I've never really had the desire to get purposely just sick hammered,
but like, yeah,
it's not fun.
I've been with you on multiple occasions where it just happens.
Yeah, it just happens. But I wasn't trying to be like, I'm going to put both of these down. Yeah. Do you have any honorable mentions?
I mean, not. I mean, you kind of mentioned them. I mean, I do have 16 on the honorable mention, but just because I feel like you have to have that. I also have 40, even though I haven't turned 40 yet, but I feel like 40 is another gateway birthday. But other than that, not really. When's your birthday?
March 16th.
This. Oh, I knew it. Come on, I knew it. Yeah.
It's coming up.
It is coming up.
It's on Saturday for anybody listening who want to give me a gift. Donate to your local me. Just send me money.
We'll put out your Venmo.
I'm going to put out my Venmo. Donate to my Venmo.
We'll start a GoFundMe for your birthday.
Can you just start a GoFundMe for no reason? Like, GoFundMe, because I need money.
I mean, I think you can. I mean, I don't see why you couldn't.
Just provide nothing? GoFundMe for no reason whatsoever. Okay, that's going to go ahead and do it for this episode of Profoundly Pointless. I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, leave us a quick review. We really appreciate it. It really helps out the show. And let us know what you think are the best birthdays. I don't really know why a 35-ish-year-old man is saying that 50 and 75 are the best birthdays, but he's an old soul.